is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are recording a very special episode on the anniversary of our very first Hoop Heads Podcast, the NBA Finals preview episode for 2019. A year ago, our very first episode was our finals preview for the year 2018. Jay, hard to believe it's been a year.
Yeah, I know. It's a year ago today. We were sitting in my parents' kitchen, I think, right? Is that what we were doing this episode?
I think you're right.
My parents' kitchen doing the first episode, just kind of trying things out, and here we are today.
So thank you to everyone who's out there who's found the podcast over the course of the year. Hopefully we'll continue to find even more people who are enjoying the podcast, but thanks to all of you out there for joining us. We're going to do a little finals preview tonight, talk some Raptors, Warriors. Jay, I believe you're going to start us out with some fun NBA finals facts.
All right, so some fun NBA finals facts. I'm sure you've seen this one, Mike. You know this is the 36th straight NBA final that someone that had played with Shaquille O'Neal has appeared in the finals. Did you see that?
I did not see that.
Okay, so it goes all the way back to 1982-83, okay, before Shaq was in the league. He played with a guy named Greg Kite.
Greg Kite, Boston Celtics.
Greg Kite played with Shaq for 2 years in Orlando, okay? And then Byron Scott was on Los Angeles the year after. That streak got all the way to the late 80s where Dennis Rodman and John Sally of the Bad Boys of Detroit also played with Shaq. Dennis Rodman, obviously, and John Sally both played with him in L.A., and then Horace Grant and Byron Scott. So, Mike, I want you to put this in perspective. 36 years, someone that's been in the finals has at one point in their career played with Shaq. That's pretty amazing.
That is pretty
good.
And
if it wasn't for Toronto winning, the streak would have broken.
So, all right, I got to think about who played with Shaq on the Raptors.
He was on the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2009-2010.
Oh, man. He's
a terrible three-point shooter this offseason or this postseason.
He's a terrible three-point shooter this postseason.
He's got a color in his last name.
Oh, Danny Green. Yeah, Danny Green. Right.
There you go. So the streak continues. Obviously, LeBron and Kobe over the last 9 or 10 years kind of carried from 2010 to present. LeBron and Kobe kind of carried the mantle and kept the streak going. So it's just. It's kind of an interesting fun fact.
That streak's got to be skating on thin ice, I would think, moving forward. But we'll see.
I still think it's pretty impressive.
That is very impressive.
Okay, so that's the first fun fact. The second fun fact, did you know that the Toronto Raptors are the first team since the 60s that features a team with no one inside the top 14 in a lottery pick or top 14 in the NBA draft that's ever appeared in the finals? Did you know that?
I did not know that, but it makes sense. Obviously, Kawhi is clearly their best player, and we all know that he was drafted at number 15 and then traded for George Hill. So I think, if you look at everybody else that they have on their roster, clearly there's nobody that was picked at the top of the draft. So I guess if I would have gone and thought about it, might have been able to come up with that. But interesting, definitely an interesting fact. It makes sense. You look at the top of drafts historically, and if you're going to get, history says that you have to have one of the five best players in the league on your team, and recent history suggests you need two, maybe even three, to get to the finals. And so it's not surprising that the teams that have been to the finals have had top five, top 10 draft picks on them. I was reading an article on The Ringer about the number of homegrown players that were drafted by their team that play key roles on the finals teams. And basically the article was making the point that most teams that end up going to the finals are not built through free agency. They're usually built, the stars of the team are typically players that have been drafted by that team. And then what tends to happen is the peripheral players on the team are the ones that end up being, bringing in a free agency. So kind of the fringe guys, and it's not the main guys. And they were just talking about how that relates to this summer and whether or not you get KD teaming up with Kyrie or Anthony Davis or whatever iteration of that may be or where Kawhi goes. And so it's just an interesting way of looking at it and thinking about how teams are constructed in the modern NBA. But certainly past precedent says that homegrown talent is where you end up getting your bread buttered. And obviously that's the case with the Warriors, Steph, Clay, and Draymond, all drafted by the team. And then they added pieces around them in free agency. But obviously those are the key guys.
Yeah. All right. So my last final fun fact is, contrary to our previous podcast, it is impossible for a team to win an NBA Finals 3-0. Just thought I'd share that with you.
Okay, that is true. That is true. It's
it was a callback.
It's funny that that was the, you know, that we talked about that tweet that I saw immediately in the aftermath of the Raptors winning that game. And I don't know. I don't know what you've been seeing or hearing, but a lot of what I've been reading is people, I think, are, I don't want to say coming around on the Raptors, but there's a lot more positive Raptors talk and more positive Raptors articles out there where people are saying, oh, I think it's going to go six games and this and that. And I mean, we could talk about it here in a second, which obviously we're going to do, but I just don't see how this team can compete with Golden State. I don't see how they can score with them. I'm not sure how they defend them. And that's without Durant. Now you put Durant back in the lineup and things get even crazier. So let's start there with, who do you think Kawhi starts out guarding on the Raptors? On the Warriors?
This is the discussion I was having with someone at work today. The matchup situation is just a disaster for the Raptors, in my opinion, because you put Kawhi on Klay Thompson. Well, then who's guarding Steph Curry? Because Kyle Lowry surely is not. You put Kawhi on Steph Curry, Lowry's not guarding Klay Thompson. And I just think there's too many issues here. And I don't know. I think if I'm the Raptors, what I'm doing is I put Kawhi on Klay. I have Lowry guarding Curry, but I have to commit someone else to being willing to double or have Kawhi basically, or Kyle Lowry basically just run Steph Curry off the three-point line at all times and force him to make twos instead of threes. I just don't know how you do that, because I just don't think the matchups are favorable at all. Because, by the way, we haven't even mentioned the fact that I don't know who's going to guard. You know, I'm assuming they're going to put Marc Gasol on Draymond Green. That's not going to go well either, by the way. I just don't see it. I just don't think that this is going to be a competitive series. And I think that all these articles that have been coming out, coming around to the Raptors, is merely trying to pump up the NBA Finals. And I think they're in for a rude awakening on Thursday night, in my opinion. But
yeah, I agree with you on the matchup. I mean, I think in a perfect world where Kawhi really was a robot and didn't just play like a robot, you might be able to make the case that he could guard Curry. And I'm not saying he can't guard Curry, because he certainly can. The question is, can he guard Curry and carry the huge offensive load that he had to carry against Philly and against Milwaukee? And I think he's going to have to carry just as big, if not a bigger, offensive load in this series against the Warriors. So you're going to ask him to chase Steph around screens and do all the things that a player who's guarding Steph needs to be able to do, and then still be not just, I'm going to go beyond the focal point of the offense, but basically create their entire offensive scheme. I just don't know that with whatever injury he's nursing and carrying the minutes load that he's going to have to carry, I'm just not sure that that's a viable solution long-term. It might be the best matchup if you just look at it in a vacuum. You put the best defensive player on the most dangerous offensive player on the other team, but I just don't know how many minutes they can go with that, with Kawhi carrying such a big load. So that's one.
The other thing that someone said to me was, you know, you could put Siakam. Siakam's a really good defender. You could put him on Curry. I'm like, okay, so then who's Lowry guarding? Like, I just don't see what this goes back to the whole, I think the matchups are just a disaster for the Raptors. And you know, there's all this talk that Ananobi, that he's going to come back and play. And I'm like, when was the last time this dude played? March or February, when he had his appendectomy, and he's just now setting
you're not,
up.
You're not going to be effective. It's the same way that the Warriors are talking about, you know, that DeMarcus Cousins might play.
He had full practice today, Mike.
I mean, he might play, but he's not going to add anything. It's interesting about what his contract situation is and whether or not coming back helps him, hurts him, what he looks like, what he's going to get offered in the summertime, what team might be interested in him, what the Warriors, do they bring him back? Because I think they can offer him, I forget what it is, it's like 120% maybe of his current salary, which obviously he's making like $5.2 million. So they could offer him like $7 million. And before he got hurt again, like that seemed ridiculous that might be a possibility. But now that could be a real possibility that maybe he comes back to the Warriors on another one-year contract to try to get himself back into getting a major payday. Because I just don't know who's going to pay DeMarcus Cousins anything near what his theoretical market value might be if he was healthy. I just don't know. So he could be back on the Warriors. But
calling Rob Pelinka.
There you go. Paging Kurt Rambis. I'm not sure, going back to what you were talking about in terms of the matchups, I think it speaks to everything that has been why Golden State has been so good, is there's no good way to match up. I mean, no matter what you do, you're creating multiple mismatches with really good players. So let's say that Siakam goes on Steph. All right, good luck with that. So then Kawhi's on Clay. Where does Lowry go? Maybe Lowry guards Clay and you try to live with that matchup. I don't think the current version of Draymond, which is about as close to peak Draymond as you're going to get, if he continues to play the way he has, I don't see Gasol being able to stay with him from the perimeter and do the things and being as mobile as he needs to do to stay in front of Draymond and take away his drives and, you know, his cuts off the short roll. I just don't know that's possible. There's just matchup problems all over the floor, but it's not a problem that's unique to Toronto. I mean, most teams, Cavs included, in the past years have struggled to find what are the right matchups, which is one of the things that I really thought was intriguing about Milwaukee making the finals, is it felt like they could put a lineup out there that could at least match up defensively with what the Warriors were going to do. Whereas I don't think Toronto has the same level of versatility to deal with Golden State. So I don't know. I think he's going to start. I think if I was betting, I would say Kawhi is probably going to start out on Clay and Lowry will start out on Steph and Siakam will start out on, I don't know.
Do we know if Iguodala is playing at all?
I'm guessing he's got to be. I'm guessing he's going to be fine. I mean, I think they probably, you know, they still probably start Looney. So that's where Gasol starts the game. And then who knows? I mean, Looney's obviously been very good in the playoffs. But, you know, this may be a case where we get a lot more, you get a lot more of the old fashioned death lineup. And who knows where Gasol fits into that equation. Serge Ibaka might actually be a better fit, at least defensively, if they go to that lineup. So I'm with you in a sense of I found it to be really, really interesting, just all the articles that have come out that have sort of given the Raptors more than a puncher's chance to keep it competitive. And I haven't seen anybody pick Toronto to win the series. And anybody who picks Toronto to win the series,
it's from Canada.
Yeah, I guess. I just don't know what you're seeing. I don't know what can give you the idea that they can win. I mean, you would be banking on an absolutely unbelievably historic series from Kawhi. And even then, I think you're relying on, like, Fred VanVleet, I'm sorry, he's not going to shoot 76% from three over the course of this series. He's not going to. I mean, he went 14 of his last 17 against Milwaukee. That just doesn't happen. I mean, that doesn't happen for Curry and Thompson, let alone for Fred VanVleet. And you're just going to rely. Toronto's going to have huge performances from all these secondary guys, and not just one or two of them playing well in a particular game. They're going to need all seven guys to be at peak performance level in order to be able to score with the Warriors. I just think Golden State's going to score, and I don't know that Toronto can keep up with them, regardless of how how good Toronto could potentially be defensively, however much trouble they could give them, which I don't think there's going to be much because we've already talked about those matchups. But I just don't know. When I look at that Raptors team, I'm just not sure how they generate offense against Golden State. And we all know from watching the Warriors and the Cavs play the last 4 years, and I've said this repeatedly over time to lots of people, and I know I've said it on the podcast, when you watch the Warriors play, they just score so many easy baskets, and the other team has to work so hard to score. And even though that you might be able to play them even for a quarter or two quarters or three quarters, at some point that run is coming. I mean, even if you look at the last series against Portland, you know, Portland's up 17, 17, and 19 in those last three games, and still they can't finish those games and close them out, which means in the course of each of those games, there was a huge run that Golden State went on offensively and defensively that enabled them to take control back of that game. And in that case, it was when they were down 17 or 19, which enabled them to come back and win a game that most average NBA teams have no chance of coming back from. But if you're playing a tighter series and the score's tied and they go on a 15-2 run, now you're basically, you know, you're out of the game. And I those are the kinds of things that I see happening. I just don't think Toronto has enough offense to be able to compete with Golden State.
Hey, there's one expert. I use that term loosely. One expert that did pick Toronto to win the first game of the series, Mike. Did you see this? Magic Johnson today.
Is he putting sea salt and vanilla on it, or what's he doing there?
I don't know. He predicted on the jump today, I think it was, that the Raptors are going to win game one because the Warriors are going to be rusty and they're going to come in expecting to blow out the Raptors. That's what he said.
All right. Well, Magic has a very interesting perspective, and obviously he's an all-time historical figure in the NBA. But I'm going to politely disagree with Magic Johnson. I actually believe that Golden State's going to come out firing on all cylinders, and I think it's going to be a message sending game.
I agree.
For the Warriors, and I think they're just going to completely throttle the Raptors in game one. I think game two, if there's going to be any chance of this being a series, I think game two will be the game that Toronto is going to have to compete and try to get, because I don't think they're going to get game one. I think Golden State's going to come out and send a huge message. I think if you look at projecting forward and you think about when and if Durant comes back. I can't remember where I heard it today, talking about how the scenarios play out for Durant. Let's say that Golden State wins the first two games, and then he's going to come back when they go back to Oracle. All right, well, at that point, they were going to win the title anyway if they win two games on Toronto's home floor. Let's say they lose both games, and then Durant comes back in. Can he save them if they lose the first two games in Toronto? I don't know. There's a whole bunch of weird scenarios and different ways that you can look at it. And obviously, if you're trying to spin it out to his free agency, you can make the case that if they win with him, if they win without him, if they look good, if they win the first two and then he comes back and they start losing, and what all of it means and the implications. And I don't know. I don't think it matters. I mean, I think they're going to win if he doesn't play any more games. I think they're going to win if he comes back. I do think that they're better with him, but they're much more fun to watch without him. And I still think that they're way better than Toronto, even when he's not there. Hey,
yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Mike, I don't give out betting advice. And this isn't Lock It In. This isn't Sal's podcast where I make predictions. But Toronto is somehow favored by a point in game one of the NBA Finals against the Warriors.
All right, who's your bookie, man?
I don't have one, but I want to find one immediately. Like, how is that even possible?
I can't fathom that. Like, I'm
in the ESPN app. I'm in the ESPN app, and they put the lines right underneath, like, this Thursday, 5:30, 9 p.m. ABC, Toronto -1.
Are they trying to get people to bet on Golden State? I don't understand. You would think that more money would come in on Golden State than would come in on Toronto. But again, what do I know? I guess I'm not an odds maker, and they've apparently looked at something. I have no idea what they're looking at because I don't see it. Again, I still look at it and say, if Milwaukee had somehow gotten here, I could at least construct a case for why Milwaukee could be competitive from a defensive standpoint and the matchups. The matchups in this series, just I don't see how Toronto can possibly stop and slow down Golden State. And as a result of that, I just don't see how they can score with the Warriors. And there's obviously things that they can do, and they can trap Steph, and they can try to take away Draymond, and they can put Kawhi on Klay Thompson and try to take him completely out of the series and make Steph and Draymond try to beat him as two guys. But the Warriors have seen all these tactics. No matter how Toronto decides to play the pick and roll, whether they trap, whether they switch, whether they hard hedge, they can do whatever they want. And Golden State knows exactly what to do. And I just don't think it matters. I don't think they have the personnel to be able to deal with the Warriors defensively.
Yep, I agree. I'm going Warriors in four. Sweep.
Wow. I want to go sweep, but I'm going to defer to the greatness of Kawhi, and I'm going to give him one. Also, because I think the Warriors still have that tendency to throw a goofy behind the back pass at a weird time to kind of disappear for a quarter or two. So I could see they disappear for a quarter or two. Toronto plays a really good game. Van Vliet goes 7 for 9 from three. Gasol has 15 points. Ibaka gets 12 rebounds. I could see him getting a game. I'm not sure where that game's going to come because I don't think they're winning game one. So I think if they win one, I think it's going to be game two. And then at home, I think the Warriors take care of business there, and then they come back and they close it out in Toronto for game five. So I'm going to go Warriors in five, but I would not be surprised at all if it goes four. I would be very surprised if it gets to game six or game seven.
So here you're going with my theory you're kind of going with my theory from last year that, I mean, you got to look at it this way too. The NBA already had one. Last year was a sweep. The finals was a sweep. I'm not saying the NBA's rigged at all, Mike. I want to just be clear in saying that. But that would be my only argument to Toronto winning a game. They're going to get some favorable calls one of their games at home because the NBA wants nothing to do with another year where the sweep is happening. I still don't understand the whole scheduling of the finals because the fact that we play on Thursday and then we don't play again until Sunday is idiotic to me because they're not going anywhere. They're in Toronto.
It's so weird that, you know, you have the first round where you have the occasional 3-day break in between games and all that. And then you get to the conference finals where it's every other day. And now you go back out to the finals, and I'm not sure what the benefit is to dragging it out that long. I mean, certainly it would seem like the every other day, especially now that people are in that mode of, okay, we played on Saturday, we're going to play again on Tuesday. And you get that every other day, people anticipating it. And then to play game one, and regardless of what the result ends up being, then having to wait 3 days before that next game, it just, to me, it kills the momentum of the series.
I understand not playing the game two on Saturday. I completely understand that because Saturday is a dead night for TV, a dead night for stuff. You know, you don't really see a lot of things. I think the only real successful sporting event on a Saturday night, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is like the Final Four. I mean, that's really the only high-profile thing they do on a late Saturday night. I mean, I completely buy into the fact that they don't want to play Saturday. Well, let's make game one Friday night then. And I know Friday night's not much. I just don't like this. Thursday. I know Thursday night's a big night for TV, and theoretically it makes sense. But if you're not going to play on Saturday, you know, because here we are, we're going to have games one on Thursday, game two on Sunday, and then game three isn't until Wednesday next week.
Yeah, so, that's ridiculous. I would have started the finals on Wednesday. Go Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday.
Well, they have in the collective bargaining agreement, when they re-signed it a few years ago, they said in the finals when they travel, they wanted 3 days in between because I'm pretty sure because of like I you have to make the argument, you know, Toronto to Golden State's about as far as you can go, right?
Like, yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that every time in between games, so here we go. So we got Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. And then if we get to the point where it's they get to game five, it's not until Monday.
All I can say is I'm so glad we're back to the 2-2-1-1-1 instead of the stupid 2-3-2 that was the league was using for a while, which was just that was ridiculous.
Well, and that brings the other problem into effect though too, Mike. Like when we get to the games 5, 6, 7, there are going to be 3 days between every single one of those games now. So I don't know if I like that. I know it lends itself
to overanalysis by people and overreacting to what happened in the previous game. I don't know. I just like the rhythm of playing every other day. To me, that makes a lot of sense as a player. I mean, I know the travel piece of it. I guess you could make a case for the travel, but I don't know. I still think you'd rather play, you know, especially once you're into it. And whether you're the team that wins and you just want to get back on the floor and win again, or you're the team that lost, to sit with that loss for 3 days while you're traveling, especially when these guys are used to. I mean, I know they're tired at the end of the season and it's been a grind and the playoffs last for 2 months. I get all that, but still, it just seems like once you get going, you'd want to get back and play, whether you're the team that just won or you're the team that just lost. To sit around for 3 days and wait for that game to come just seems like it would be torturous.
Yeah,
regardless of what the travel situation is, I still think you'd want to just get back out on the floor and play. But I guess, again, the league knows more about what they're trying to accomplish than we do. So
they got to go through customs this time, man.
That's true. So that could slow everything up. But I'm glad it's 2-2-1-1-1 instead of 2-3-2, which that format was terrible. It was just, you split the first game in the 2-3-2, and now all of a sudden the team that's the lower seeded team has a chance to wrap it up at home, which, you know, didn't happen all the time, but still psychologically, it just felt a lot different than the 2-2-1-1-1, which I like a lot more. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have anything else on this. I think it's going to be, I'm not sure it's how competitive it's going to be. I think it's going to be just another coronation for the Warriors. And to me, the most interesting part of it is what happens.
Piece.
Yeah, is the Durant side of it, and see what happens when and if he comes back, and then all the speculation that goes along with the result of the series and what that means for his impending.
He did travel to Toronto, Mike. So that's a little
okay. All right.
That's a nugget that just came out a little bit ago. He did travel to Toronto, so.
So who knows? Maybe he'll suit up in one of those two games. You never know. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I know they've said he's going to miss game one, and maybe he comes out and plays in game two. Maybe he waits till they get back to Oracle. I'm not sure, but it should be that to me is the piece that's interesting because they've obviously played so well for 5.5 games without him. And I still think that he makes them better. They're not better without him. They're certainly different. They're more fun to watch without him, just the style of basketball that they play. But it'll be fascinating to see him come back, try to get reintegrated, just to see the team chemistry and how they interact with each other. And then just knowing that his impending decision is looming over everything that happens and the implications of if they're winning, if they're losing, what happens if they win, what happens if they lose. You know, everybody's just obviously guessing here, so we don't really know. But I think that part of it is going to be fascinating to watch and see and hear and just figure out what's going to develop through the rest of the series and heading into the summer and see where he ends up. So we'll see.
I completely agree. I think we should close and thoughts and prayers are with Dan Gilbert, Mike. Do you have any takes on that or did you see that? You
know, I mean, I did see he had, I mean, I don't know what the level of severity is.
They haven't officially, I know they didn't say anything. They haven't said anything. So that makes me a little bit concerned for him because they haven't come out with anything about it yet. So I don't know.
Yeah, obviously, hopefully he's okay. I did see that, but I hadn't seen any updates, so it sounds like maybe they haven't put any out there. So hopefully Dan is okay, and he'll be back running the day-to-day operations for the Cavs sooner rather than later. And obviously heading into the draft, you want to have your owner involved, and hopefully you know, in good spirits and good health. So best wishes to Dan and his family. Hopefully, whatever the severity of the stroke was, hopefully that, you know, we wish him a speedy recovery and get back soon.
I agree. And one non-basketball related note, the Indians went to the bottom of the ninth down 5-2, Mike.
Is that baseball?
Top of the ninth. They were down 5-2 against the Red Sox. They've rattled off 5 runs in the top of the ninth, and now they're winning 7-5. I can't believe it. They're terrible. But
well, if I could name 10 Major League Baseball players, it'd be a lot. So
Barry Bonds is still not in the Major League Baseball.
He's not? All right. What about Babe Ruth? Is he still playing?
No, he's not.
Okay. All right. Well, that's about the best I could do.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening to our NBA Finals preview for the year 2019. This is now our second NBA Finals preview in the history of the Hoopheads podcast. So to everyone out there, thanks for listening to this episode, and we will catch you on our next one. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.